All right, everybody. Hello. Again. The third or fourth time tonight. We're going to get started going here with our final speaker of the evening, Joshua Gilliland? Gilliland Esquire. He is an actual lawyer who's going to talk to us about actual law, about a not actual universe. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Ask him about his pins later. They're great. Welcome back to the Nerdnet LA stage, please. Josh for Infinity Law.
Thank you. Let's set some expectations. First off, Walt Simonson wrote the best issues of Thor ever in the 1980s, and issue 380 is my favorite. The first Avengers arc that I read was the assault on Avengers Mansion, where Black Knight is beaten by Mr. Hyde, Hercules is beaten to a coma, and they make a comeback, because that's what heroes do. Now let's talk about the Marvel Cinematic Universe over the last 10 years. Who here walked out of Infinity War sobbing? You're supposed to. It's the middle of the story. Don't worry, they have a lot to avenge. And Carol's on her way, so it's gonna work out. Now let's talk about what we can learn about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Because, in my humble opinion, Captain America is the greatest superhero of all time. Before the United States was even in World War II, Joe Simon and Jack Kirby wrote Cap. Cap created that character, and the first issue is of Cap punching Hitler in the face. There were protests outside of Timely Comics because there were some people in New York who thought there were good Nazis. And they were wrong. And that's still wrong. Well, let's talk about what we can learn about the security state from Captain America. Because in Captain America Civil War, Cap and the Avengers go down to South America, and there is a small issue, and some civilians are killed. And instead of coming up with a sane solution of like, hey, we can't have superheroes run around unregulated, let's come up with something super draconian and pass that as a treaty that 177 countries sign. Now, there are a bunch of problems with that, because if you're the civil rights type of person that we all should be as Americans, that should give everyone pause like, time out, is that even a good idea? Well, let's talk about why Team Cap is right, and I appreciate Team Iron Man, but they're wrong. So, the Sokovia Accords, which is a massive booklet, and we only see like a page and a half of it, so we don't know how intense it is written, but in this document, superheroes have to sign away that they will not take any superhero action without approval by the United Nations, and only when the UN, you know, says it's necessary to do so. And you know what, let's put Thunderbolt Ross in charge of this as the Secretary of State, because you know he has a great record of civil rights and hunting down the Hulk. And that's just wrong. So on many levels, this looks like a draft. Now, drafts are legal. We have conscription acts in the United States, and men can be drafted in, and that's actually constitutional. It's okay that we don't have women get drafted. There's no equal protection challenge to that, because that's the way we wrote the law, and that's how it works. But drafts have to be random. You can't go, we're going to draft everyone who's a superhero. That's like saying, you know what? We don't need to draft white people. Let's draft those that we don't mind get killed. And that would be unconstitutional, which is why the Accords coming across as a draft for superheroes is one level of constitutional violations. Let's look at another. This baby never goes to the Senate. Some bureaucrat going to Germany to sign an accord doesn't make it a law. You can't have a treaty that would violate our Constitution going, hey, we're going to take people that we don't like and cart them off to secret prisons. We've seen countries do that, and we're the ones who are supposed to liberate those people. Problem. The other thing is you need a two-thirds vote in the United States Senate in order for this thing to become law, and even then, the laws can't violate our Constitution. Moreover, generally when we enact treaties, we then start enacting them as laws, like NATO, like that's a treaty, and it's a good one because it ensures peace, and God forbid we ever have someone who decides to say NATO's a bad thing. You know, like, they do their part in making sure that the world's stable. But I digress. The other thing that's really scary about civil war is this giant floating submersible prison ship that they built rather quickly. So just by way of comparison, the newest aircraft carrier that we're building is something like, it's the USS Gerald Ford, because Jerry deserves a carrier. He was a great man, a great patriot, and I'm serious. But that's estimated to take 10 years to build, and something like, what was it, it's in the billions, high billions. We don't just crank those out. Now, building a giant submersible aircraft carrier type thing in a weekend? That's weird, because the accords are signed and they magically already have this. And they are taking Americans and imprisoning them without anything that looks like a trial. So that violates the writ of habeas corpus. You can't just round people up and throw them into jails. There's the Fourth Amendment. You know, it's listed number 4 because it's important. And that's to keep people from being subject to arbitrary arrest. You need probable cause. The Fifth Amendment, you need to be, can't be deprived of life, liberty, without due process of law, and taking people to a giant submarine prison counts. You have the right of counsel. Now, the right of counsel cases are awesome. They start in the 30s, they work their way up, and notice we did write that into the Fifth and Sixth Amendments because that's who we are. We give a damn, and we don't want people being prosecuted without an attorney. None of the Star Chamber crap. That's what we fought the Revolutionary War for. And the funny thing about the Revolutionary War, the Brits had prison ships in Boston. And that's where they put Revolutionary War POWs. Over 11,500 Americans died in those prison ships. When we think about cruel and unusual punishment, that was Exhibit A for the Founding Fathers in drafting the Eighth Amendment and saying, hell no, we don't do that here, which is why we've never had prison ships. There's a reason, because we literally have bodies of Americans who died in them. So the fact that the raft is built, there's no judge on board, there's no federal prosecutor, there's no defense counsel, as Americans are rounded up and put into secret prisons that submerge. No. So again, but I'm funny, and this is how I watch movies, and I go, no, that's not okay. And that does keep me single, which saves lots and lots of money. Now let's talk about the other issue in Civil War that made me sit up. Yeah, so we might have the best Spider-Man and Peter Parker ever right now. And I love Aunt May in this because every Aunt May they've had has brought a different quality to the character. Well, you can't just take a kid overseas to go fight superheroes. So the tests from New York for whether or not you've entered into child endangerment or contributing to the delinquency of the minor are thus fold. That you are knowingly acting in a manner likely to be injurious
to the physical, mental, or moral welfare of a child less than 17 years old. That's Peter. And you start authorizing Peter to engage in combat against the greatest soldier ever. A woman with the superhuman power to alter matter and reality. Falcon, that's not granted. He does fly and he can shoot from the sky. One of the greatest assassins of all time. So, you know, you start thinking about, hey, should there be a permission slip? Well, this is what it could look like. Of having Aunt May sign off on what Peter's going to be doing in Germany. You know, there's the issue of whether or not he even has a passport. But this is highly problematic because Aunt May isn't knowingly signing away to anything right now. And she might have some strong feelings about that. Like that we saw finally at the end of Spider-Man Homecoming. Which, again, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. Now let's talk about the movie that made me learn to love again. And that was Guardians of the Galaxy. Other than the fastest on-screen death of a mom in movie history, faster than Finding Nemo, I timed it. Star-Lord goes to Morag, an abandoned planet, to find an Infinity Stone. Is that stone his? Well, the answer is, all the time I spent in property my first year of law school. Yes, it is his, because the entire planet is abandoned, meaning all the property on it is abandoned. Thus, whoever finds abandoned property is the owner of said property. So that Infinity Stone was totally his, and he was right to give it to Xandar and everything that then followed. Now let's talk about the scene in one movie that validated contract law. And that, of course, is Doctor Strange. Because it took his doctor to save the world with contract law. Dormammu? God, I've never been able to say that because, you know, people wrote it and didn't expect it to be said out loud. I've come here to bargain. The rules for a contract are offer, acceptance, consideration, and performance. You then get into breach. Well, let's break down what we have. We have stated contractual terms that Doctor Strange would end the time loop in exchange for the safety of Earth, and all those crazy zealots would be taken to the dark dimension. Those are contractual terms. The consideration, the mutual performance of both parties is ending the assault on Earth in order to break the time loop. Now, this does raise a really interesting question about third-party beneficiaries. I know. And for that, we must turn to the legal sorcerer known in the Book of Murray. And that is Murray on contracts, which when we look back at old con law or contractual law, going back to 1859, this is what set this rule in the United States. Because the rules in England at the time were, there's no such thing as a third party beneficiary. Well, us being Americans, we went, contraire, mon frère. Yes, there will be. So this rule came about when one person makes a promise to another for the benefit of a third person may maintain an action to enforce that promise. When you have end this destruction on Earth and give the bad guy exactly what he wants, that makes him a third-party beneficiary. So yes, you can run an action. Now granted, this is why it's really, really important to read the warning labels at the end of the spells, which is another issue on whether or not the spells are adequately labeled, but read my blog post on that for that answer. But yes, I would say that the Zealots were third-party beneficiaries. Now let's talk about what my second favorite Marvel movie, and that's Thor Ragnarok. Are as Guardians refugees under international law. Now, what could cut in their favor is, you know, the president could go like, well, I think they're from Norway, and we know he likes that. It's not like they're from Jotunheim. And there's a strong argument that the answer is yes. And even somebody from Jotunheim should be considered a refugee, especially if they're traveling in a caravan, because the color of their blue skin does not determine whether or not they're refugees. The fact that they are being persecuted is the test, which is the test that we can look at for the Asgardians. Now, one could say that Surtur destroyed Asgard. Now, we do have that wonderful planetary nation state, and it was cool to see it blow up. But the fact that the Asgardians were being hunted and killed by Hela because of their status as Asgardians makes them persecuted. That was the sole reason she went on a killing spree. You could say that they had a well-founded fear of persecution based upon that status. Also, the president could say that the destruction of their planet was an unforeseen emergency requiring that they be given refugee status. And personally, I do think they should go to Norway. Odin said it could be home. Now let's talk about the big issue in Infinity War. How do we probate all of those deaths? This is where dust in the wind starts. Now, it's going to be easier to defeat Thanos than to try doing this in court. But let's just break this down of why I took Wilson Truss that summer of law school. This is complicated. If you love your family, write a will. You could do a simple one at home on a piece of paper, and that's called a holographic will. If you don't have a will, you fall into something called intestate succession. And California being a community property state, this gets weird fast. So if you're married, your wife is entitled to half the community property. Excuse me, the spouse. The surviving spouse is entitled to one half of the quasi-community property, and you wonder, what's that? That's property acquired in another state. That would be community property acquired in California. Now, we then have all these tests to go through of figuring out who gets what. And this is why you pay estate lawyers lots of money to write a good will, because if you love people, you will make sure their lives aren't living hell after you die. And I don't do estate law. Now, if you aren't married in California and you die, here is the long checklist of how property flows.
That's a lot of very small words.
I know. I did that to fit it on one slide. So lots happening here of, does it flow down to children? If there are no children, back up to your parents. If your parents are dead, what happens then? This is the stuff lawyers have to think about, and why estate planning is one of the most challenging areas in the practice of law. Well, let's make it personal in LA County. So we have 10.16 million people here. There are 489 judges. 11 departments handle probate. There are about 40 cases each day per department, which means 440 cases a day, and cases a month are 8,800 as an estimate. Let's talk about the post-snap. How many judges are left? We don't know if the snap was proportional. Are there 5 probate judges left or 0? We don't know if LA's intact, but everyone in San Diego's dead.
That's the problem. We don't know how Thanos murdered everyone.
But we do know that LA could have 5.08 million new probate cases all in one day. And the challenge with that is, how are we going to get death certificates for piles of dust? So the issue of fraud, or the way that insurance companies could be bankrupted, is intense. Now let's talk about prosecuting Thanos, because I'm a big fan of justice. Now, when we won World War II because the Nazis were bad and we're the good guys, there were two schools of thought. You had Senator Robert Taft, who thought, hey, just take them behind the barn and shoot them. That was the isolationist point of view. And the other point of view was, no, we're going to put these bastards on trial, because they engaged in something called genocide. And that is systematically wiping people out. And killing half of all life is genocide. Now, we put together, in the latter half of World War II, we had the Moscow Proclamation and the London Accords to put together the structure of how would we try these bastards. And we could do something similar with Thanos. So, in coming up with a Titan tribunal, have a, you know, what we did in Nuremberg was a four-judge panel. You could figure out something based upon all life that doesn't get crazy, so you don't have 50 judges. Get like 4 to 5. And then figure out what we charge them with. Well, there's crimes against peace, waging a war of aggression. Yeah, what happened on the Asgardian refugee ship, or Xandar, or Nowhere, or Wakanda, all fall under categories of wars of aggression. War crimes, just murder? Yeah, he did lots of that. And then what we call crimes against humanity here, but we would give it a new name in space, is murder, extermination, enslavement. He did all of those things. So let's put him on trial if we can catch him, which is a different issue. But why is this important? Well, we dealt with monsters before. And Justice Robert Jackson, who was on the U.S. Supreme Court and took leave to prosecute the Nazis, his opening statement took 2 days. He played to win. Now, the Nazis who were on trial, majority of them had very high IQs. Several had genius level. None were below average. These were intelligent people who decided, we're going to make the world better by exterminating those we don't like. And the world stood up after we crushed them and said, hell no. So, there's just one statement, and I will read it because every lawyer should know this. Civilization asks whether law is so laggard as to be utterly helpless to deal with crimes of this magnitude by criminals of this order of importance. It does not expect that you can make war impossible. It does not expect that you can your judicial action will put the forces of international law, its precepts, its prohibitions, and most of all, its sanctions on the side of peace, so that men and women of goodwill in all countries may have leave to live by no man's leave underneath the law. Most of those people were sentenced to death. Many were sentenced to life in prison. Some got off light with 20 years. Some of them, after getting death sentences, committed suicide because they didn't want to give international justice the dignity of putting them down for their crimes. Moreover, there's no defense to war crimes. We didn't want them to testify in open court. No, what we did was right. We wouldn't want Thanos to go, I'm an environmentalist. I did the right thing to restore balance. So, in thinking about true evil, you have to think in terms of the law exists for people to live free without fear. And comics and the movies that they can all make from them are supposed to represent the best of us, things that we aspire to. There was a reason why people went home crying after seeing Spider-Man die in Iron Man's arms. Yeah.
I know. If you haven't seen it now, it's been one of the highest grossing movies of all time. Like, how'd that happen? They'll make a comeback. Because this is what we want to see. We want to see good triumph. We got to see a peek of that Tuesday. And stay tuned. So with that, any questions that aren't legal advice?
Keep it going, Josh. All right, we got a question right here in the front.
Hi.
Hello.
So, in basically every single superhero film, we see a lot of destruction of city and property. Who's liable for what in that situation?
So, we've explored this a little, and insurance would have some serious problems. Just as people get earthquake insurance in California or hurricane insurance, in Florida, you would probably see superhero insurance. I did a post on who pays for acts of Godzilla, and this is similar to that of who can recover. And you look at whether or not there's a duty to rescue, and in many generally no. However, you get superheroes who fall into anything from like the Daredevil category, who go around and save women from being sold into slavery, to others who patrol the city at night to make sure that in the Spider-Man category. And they don't have a legal duty to do that. So you could think of them as falling under type of Good Samaritan type laws. But if a building gets leveled by an alien invasion, look to that for insurance.
All right, another question right off here to your left. Hello.
Hey.
Great talk.
Thank you.
I really loved a lot of your allusions to the current administration. And in that vein, it got me thinking about another one of Thanos's possible crimes, in that he adopted some of the peoples that he was exterminating. And I didn't know until the family separation is actually that part of genocide, or at least I saw this online, so who knows, that part of genocide actually is just, or one of the ways that it's done is to be giving the children of one group to another, and so I was wondering if you could elaborate on that, and maybe Thanos' role in that, too.
Yeah, so after Guardians 1, I actually did a blog post on Thanos, what to know before you adopt. And it would not be in the best interest of the children for them to be adopted by Thanos after he murdered their families. That is actually something that would prohibit him from adopting. And when you look at the actual forms and standards for adoption, that would be a big one. Now, the issue is enforcement, because he clearly didn't go to court to do this. It was more the victor's justice type of situation. Still wrong. And part of the issue is how to enforce that. And this is why not all problems are solved in court. There was this belief during the American Civil War that, that was a legal issue of 11 states trying to nullify a presidential election because they wanted to own people. And there was no way to litigate that, so it turned into war. And so in taking on Thanos, it's a similar doctrine of the crazed environmentalist in the movies who wants to wipe out half of all life. And that's something that does need to be met with force. What happens after force and prosecuting, that's a different standard.
All right, blood and stone here. Maybe squeezing one more question. We've got one that's all the way in the corner. The one that I saw go up first. No, it's couch, so it's easy.
So let's say that Bruce Banner was around instead of being over in Sakaar when the Sokovia Accords were being signed.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say Bruce Banner had actually signed it, whereas the Hulk would probably smash it, since that's what the Hulk does. How would you apply law to two individuals who share the same physical body, where one of them has entered into the agreement, but the other one has not?
So they're
the Hulk is so much fun. And if you're not reading The Immortal Hulk right now, go pick it up. It's awesome. Try reading comics. They're good. Short answer is, the law's not quite designed for this, because people don't turn into monsters, but you do have issues with the insanity defense. So there are issues with being able to say Banner is not responsible for the Hulk's actions, because he's clearly not in control and is put in the backseat, or in the case of Ragnarok, like in the trunk for 2 years of not knowing what's going on. Even though once a car, I think time passes differently, so it might not be 2 years for him, but let's just say like 5-6 months of like not knowing what's happening, which raises an interesting issue for, since the Hulk was killing people for fun as a gladiator, him coming back to Earth is problematic, and Valkyrie catching people to put them into slavery would knock her out of asylum status as well. And let's not get into Loki, but if you didn't hear the news, he's getting a TV show on the Disney app.
All right, we're going to wrap it up here. One more big round of applause for Josh. Thank you for having us, everyone. If you have more questions for Josh, I have it on good authority that this is just Coca-Cola. He decided not to drink until after his presentation. It's after his presentation now. You can buy him a drink and ask him all kinds of questions.
Thank you.